There's one sound that no one knows. What does the fox say?
Hello and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, episode number 42. Today I am joined by Danya and our special guest, Jen.
Hello.
Today we're going to be talking about Japanese mythology and culture, which I'm really excited about because I know nothing about it. But these two are experts, or so I'm told. So they're going to tell us all about it. Just in case you guys want to get in touch with us, don't forget that Twitter is NATW Podcast, Tumblr is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, and our email address is natwpodcast@gmail.com. And Jen, your contact information on both Twitter and Tumblr is P1013, right?
Right, that is correct.
Okay, cool. So where are we starting, you guys?
I think we're going to talk a little bit about the kitsune because we've had a lot of questions, both on the Tumblr and I think people asking on the Twitter account, especially when we announced when we were going to be doing this episode, to just talk a little bit about it because a lot of people don't really know much about it other than it's a fox. So I think that'll probably be a good starting point is just to go from there, like what the kitsune actually is. So kitsune itself is just essentially the Japanese word for fox, but it has a lot of like connotation in mythology and folklore.
In general, when you hear the term kitsune in Western discussions, it's referring to that mythological aspect and not to like the animals.
Yeah, they're kind of almost depicted in the mythology as spiritual. Mm-hmm. So they vary in terms of like what they're seen as. So the older the actual kitsune is, sometimes the more tails they have, for example, and it goes up to 9, mm-hmm. I believe. So yeah. at the most. So
like actual tails, like yes. Like part yeah. of your body. Okay, right. I wasn't sure if you're like T-A-I-L or T-A-L-E.
No, I'll be totally nerdy about this, but if you're a fan of Pokemon, in the first generation, you have Vulpix, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
Which then, you know, its evolution is the white fox whose name I'm forgetting, but the number of tails. Right, the number of tails increases between the two, which would very accurately reflect this idea of as the fox ages and becomes wiser and more powerful, they grow more tails.
Dude, that is, like, really cool. I used to be, like, really into Pokemon, and I think I vaguely remember that, but that's kind of awesome.
Oh, I'm not even vaguely into Pokemon. I'm still ridiculously into Pokemon.
I just had a 3DS so I could play the new Pokemon. Like,
I'm almost at that point. I'm almost at that point of getting a 3DS to play the new Pokemon.
It's so good. It's so good. But anyway, sidetracking.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Back on track. obviously, going off the basis of how it was used in Teen Wolf is that we know that Jeff is probably going to be thinking of using them in terms of shape-shifting and right. shape-shifters, because obviously that being a major theme going through with werewolves and all of that. So they are known for their shape-shifting ability and their ability to assume human form. Typically, when they take human form, they tend to be female.
Yep.
And they tend to trick males. Like when they go into their sort of employ their ability to trick others, they tend to almost exclusively, I don't remember reading a lot of tales where they actually trick other females. It's usually males. So they assume a female form usually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I read one story out of a collection of folk tales called The Legend of Tono, which is a collection of stories, I think, from around the mid-century that were gathered together around the town of Tono, which is in the northeastern area of Japan. And one of the stories that was in there was instead of actually the fox assuming a female form, the fox assumed a male form. And so this traveler is going along. He sees a buddy of his. They decide to go wrestle in a field for some reason. And when they're done, it was as boys do. It sounded really homoerotic, and I wasn't sure if that was intentional or not. But it was just like, you know, in the story I'm reading, they're like, "Hey, you want to wrestle in that field over there? Sure, that's a great idea." And so they go wrestle in a field, and when the guy leaves, he realizes that a couple rice cakes that he had carried on him were missing. And so, like, 2 or 3 days later, he runs into this guy again. He's like, "Dude, why'd you steal my food when we were wrestling?" And the guy's like, "I didn't wrestle with you." And they're like, "Oh, must have been a fox. Totally was a fox." That makes the most sense.
Wow. So. Now, this is actually really interesting because we've gotten sort of several implications that it's possible that Kira, who's going to be the kitsune for Teen Wolf, mm-hmm. is actually going to be like a possible love interest for Styles. So mm-hmm. if the female kitsune is usually trick the males that they come across, what does mm-hmm. that mean for Styles?
I was going to say, because this is really interesting that in most, like most tales where a kitsune will take a female form, it is usually for love. A lot of the major themes of that is that they will tend to turn themselves into a female form to kind of enter into a relationship almost. And that's in quite a lot of different folk mm-hmm. tales as well. I'm trying to think of any specific examples or ones that I know of. Do you know of any, Jen? Like, yeah, off the top of your head?
Yeah, one that I read fairly recently. It was kind of, the story was to explain why they're called kitsune. And there's a couple different theories about why that's the terminology, like the etymology of it.
Yeah.
And in this one, a man finds a beautiful woman. They get married. They have a whole bunch of kids. And it turns out he finds out that she's really a fox, and she runs off because she's embarrassed about it. And she thinks he's not going to want anything to do with her. And he comes back and says, "I love you no matter what. I'm, you know, always going to be waiting for you." And so she comes back every night after running around all day as a fox to be with him. And the idea is that ki means to come. And then tsune is always, so it means to always come or always return.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I'm like a huge word nerd, and so that's really cool.
Yeah, that's a really nice story as well. I like that one.
I like that one too. And there's so much mythology in Japan, just folk tales in general, about animals that transform into women and get married to men, and the endings are always really sad. So it's nice that one's not depressing. It's not like the the crane wife or something like that, where she ends up plucking all her feathers out and dying.
Like, oh my god. Now, this could be like totally wrong, because I did a while ago, when they first announced the kitsune myth was going to be involved with Teen Wolf, I did some like very basic research and stuff like that, but I did read that they can shapeshift into mm-hmm. other people. Is that definitely something that could happen?
I mean, that'd be cool.
I'm thinking in terms of like, you know, the characters, like, you know, could, I mean, let's just assume that, yeah, Kira is the one that's going to be the kitsune, because we pretty much know that at this point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what if she turns into Allison or Lydia or something
like that? That would be really cool. That would be really, really cool. Oh my gosh. What if she turned into Kate?
Oh.
Or Laura. Oh my god.
Or Jennifer. And then Haley could come back.
That would also be okay. I loved her.
We're just always thinking of ways to bring Haley back.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That could be cruel. Oh, what if she came back as Styles' mom?
Oh.
Haven't there been spoilers saying that there's going to be a scene with her?
I think we're going to delve into that, but I don't think that she's been cast, and I don't think we're going to see her just yet. But I know we're going to get more information about how she died.
Yeah.
But man, oh, this could be really rough.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, any specific examples that I can think of that would back that up, like turning into
like a story I told earlier of the two dudes wrestling in the field. The fox turned into this guy's friend. And then there's also a really long running history of fox possession, where people claim they've been possessed by a kitsune and they behave erratically or crazy. So maybe that'll be something that comes in as people getting possessed by the spirit.
All of this talk is really interesting because a lot of what you guys are saying reminds me of what we already know is going on with the darkness and Styles, Allison, and Scott, and how, you know, there's been implications that they're possibly going to get possessed and the different things that are going on there. And it's kind of strange that the two sound so similar, because as far as I know, they're going to kind of be like two different storylines.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I guess there's going to be quite a lot of crossover. Mm-hmm. Or I'd imagine, because they're going to go on, I think they're going to go on a certain theme for this part. And I think this whole theme of like losing your mind kind of thing would really play into that as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe fox possession is a kind of thing. But again, the same with when the kitsune would turn into a human, it would typically be female. The same with the possession side of it. By a fox, the victim is almost exclusively young women. When they're possessed, the fox enters beneath the fingernails or through the breast.
Oh, that sounds very uncomfortable.
Yeah, it says that in some cases the facial features and expressions will change so that they resemble a fox more.
Yeah, I've heard their voice will change too to sound more fox-like. Like it doesn't sound like the person anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm now going to be thinking about stuff under fingernails for the rest of this conversation.
Sorry, guys. Sorry about that.
So, okay, another question for you guys. I also read that there are, like, several different kinds of kitsune, that, like, that's just one type, but there are a lot of other ones, too, aren't they? Aren't there?
There are a couple different variations that I've read of where it's like there's, I keep thinking of the Japanese terms instead of the English ones. Like spirit.
You can explain it.
Yeah.
As
like, right. Like there's spirit foxes, there's flying foxes. Those are more related to like the tengu, the crow demons that you see in Japanese mythology. There's ones of sea and air and all this stuff, but I think really the big two are just the kitsune, the general, you know, one that you hear about, and then the no kitsune.
It just kind of sounds evil to me. I don't know if that's true, but it does.
They're not necessarily evil. They're like the major difference is that the kitsune is usually seen as being a messenger, almost a servant at times of the deity Inari. And they serve them, but the no kitsune doesn't. So they're inherently like they're more, I guess, they're mischievous.
Tricky. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Tricky, mischievous. Like they're not necessarily always malicious in what they're doing. So it's not exactly evil. They just don't serve the same deity. And I think it's the no kitsune are actually the only ones out of all the variations that don't.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And to be nerdy about the etymology again, the difference between kitsune and no kitsune, they're actually written with almost the exact same characters, the symbol that's read as kitsune. But with no kitsune, it's appended with a character that means like agriculture or fields, which then changes the sound. So it goes from kitsune to gitsune. So it's the no kitsune, literally means like foxes of the field or wild foxes. Just to be nerdy again.
That is totally acceptable.
Yeah, I think that's the major, major difference between those two. I'm guessing that because those are the only ones that have also been mentioned at any point in regards to the show. I would guess that because they're the more prevalent as well in most in most of the folklore and mythology, that those are probably the only two that they'll likely touch on. Or otherwise they'll if they do want to bring in like characteristics of the other kinds of kitsune, they would probably generalize it just under the branch of kitsune, because I think to try and bring something like that and have too many of the different kinds of kitsune, it would get a little bit confusing, especially with like how much they will probably want to cover in this. So I would imagine that they'll probably just bring it down to being the two basics, so the kitsune and the nogitsune.
Yeah, and if we're talking about aesthetics of it, I wouldn't be surprised if they throw in the nine tails just because it looks really cool.
Yeah.
Every time I've seen it, it looks awesome. And then also the kitsune, as they get older, they turn white. So you read about these white foxes running around doing cool things. So I wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing a nine-tailed white fox.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Be awesome. If their CG department does a good job.
Yeah. Or maybe somebody, unfortunately, will have to get into a big, white, fuzzy, nine-tailed fox costume.
Pretty sure a cosplayer will have already done that.
Yeah,
probably.
It'd be cool. Especially considering Naruto. Naruto has a Kyuubi, so Kyuubi fox demon. And that has nine tails, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it does.
It's been a very long time since I watched or read it. So if there are any Naruto fans listening, I apologize if I got that wrong. I mean it. It has been about a good 5 years since I last read or watched it. So
I'm pretty sure it comes out of the same mythology. So.
Yeah.
I think you're okay.
That's good.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm both looking forward to and dreading next 3B because, you know, I have a degree in Japanese studies. So like I am, you can put it in air quotes, I'm an expert.
Oh, you're totally an expert.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need air quotes.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about it. I really like seeing Japanese mythology getting investigated and looked at and explored more. It also is so near and dear to my heart that if they make any mistakes, I'm going to be rolling around on the floor crying.
You know, that's actually kind of interesting though, because in a lot of ways they've kind of put a spin on the werewolf mythology. So I wonder if they're going to do the same thing with this. And I wonder if it's going to come off as like, you know, this is their version of it in this world, or if it's going to seem, you know, like it's a mistake. I hope that if they do put a spin on it, they make it evident that, you know, they're doing it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a really good question to ask, because the kitsune and then Inari as a deity, they're very prevalent in Japan. And if you've ever seen pictures, like if you Googled like Japan and do an image search, you almost always come up with the place where you have all of those bright red gates that are back to back to back to back. And that is at Fushimi Inari, which is the main temple to Inari located in Kyoto. So it has a lot of cultural importance as myth in Japan.
It's a very, very sensitive thing. If you, particularly with the kitsune and Inari, because it's still so prevalent in Japan. I mean, whilst doing a little bit more research into it, I think Jen initially found this when we were chatting the other day. Is it Shiseido?
Yeah, Shiseido.
Yeah, they are Japan's largest cosmetics manufacturer, and they have a main office, a head office in Tokyo. On the roof of their building, they have a shrine to Inari, and they are still very, very devoted to it. And it's still very, very prevalent, even in like kind of very, very a modern setting almost, because it's such a cultural thing and they hold on so dearly to that, and it's so important to them that it almost becomes a very, very sensitive subject to tackle as well, because it's still so dear to everyone there.
Right.
So I can understand that maybe going with a sort of spin on it would be quite interesting, but at the same time still trying to be very sensitive to the fact that this is still something that is dear to a lot of Japanese people, and people who in fact study it as well, because it has such importance throughout pretty much, I mean, anything you study, like the fox itself is still a major symbol through a lot of it. I mean, there are like statues. Typically, when you think of like Chinese temples and the gods in front of the temples, you have the big stone gods. They have foxes, the actual fox, giant stone foxes in front of the Inari temples, which are like the gods of the temples. So it's, yeah, it's still a very, very, very prevalent thing in Japan. So it would be nice to see like a bit of a spin on it and almost a modernization and bringing it into the Teen Wolf world. But at the same time, it would be nice to see them still being very, very kind of, respectful. Yeah, very respectful to the actual mythology itself. I'd love to see that. I mean, I've got some very, very high hopes for this because this is something I've always been really, really interested in. Japanese mythology and everything like that has been huge. I've always been interested in it. So hearing that they were going to be bringing that in, I will admit I got excited. I got really excited. I'm still excited. I want to see where they're going with it a lot. I've got so many books on my shelf for all of this stuff as well, and it's just, yeah, I'm super excited.
For me, I'm super stoked because they're going to be, I mean, the act that they hired speaks Japanese, so I'm really hoping they have Japanese dialogue in the show. Because like,
that would be great.
I watched Heroes, and I would flip out because I'd be watching it, and I wouldn't be reading the subtitles, and I would love to do that. Love did that with Teen Wolf.
I did that not with Heroes, with Wolverine, the new Wolverine movie, because they didn't subtitle everything. They only subtitled parts of that movie, which was really, really funny to me because I was sat there thinking, hold on a second, most of what they're actually saying right now isn't in the subtitles. Which amused me. So if you have seen it, the subtitles are only very selective, by the way, if you've seen the new Wolverine movie.
Yeah. And that's not cool.
Well, the wonderful thing about Japanese is a lot of the language is like, what's the word I'm thinking of? Like, you infer it from what's being discussed. So you can have an entire sentence that's just an adjective, and it can be like, you know, like the one you hear the most of is like Genki, which means the full form of it is Genki na, which means like spirited, lively, healthy. And if you have two close friends coming up to each other on the street, they go, oh, Genki. And that means, oh, how are you doing? And, you know, it's just it's one word. It's just an adjective, but it's an entire sentence. So it makes sense to me that they don't have everything up there because direct translation almost always ends up being way too much.
Yeah.
And see, this is really interesting to me, too, as somebody who doesn't know really anything about this, is I'm really interested in seeing this myth come to life on screen. Mm-hmm. And it actually makes me think that maybe they'll go down the more traditional route just because, you know, with werewolves, everybody knows about werewolves. I mean, there's a whole sort of kind of brand of this mythology all across the world. And but, you know, in America, not a lot of people are going to know a lot about the kitsune. So I kind of think that maybe they will be more traditional and respectful just because it's sort of an opportunity to teach us more about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of anything that's like kind of been almost in popular culture available to kind of a more westernized audience. Mm-hmm. Again, a lot of that is going to be mostly video games, if I think about it, where the kitsune or a variation of the kitsune has been used. It's not something that's typically or that I've typically seen in any kind of Western television show or even movies. So off the top of my head, thinking Pokemon, they've definitely had like a few different variations of it other than Vulpix and Ninetales. You've probably got Zoroa and Zoroark and Fennekin, I think, is another one.
Fennekin?
They're all fox-based. And then other video games would probably be Okami.
I was thinking about that too, but I mean, that I mean, okami means it's a kind of a play on words because it means like the honorific for God, but then it's also the word for wolf. So I think it's pretty well stated in there that she's a wolf and then also a scion, I guess, of Amaterasu.
I'm pretty sure that there's two characters within the game though that are called Ninetales and Foxfire though, right?
I'll be honest, I've not played it before, so okay. I'm kind of going off of what I've seen. I had a friend who played it, and I watched a little bit, and I thought it was very pretty.
Yeah. So other than I'm not necessarily meaning like the main character. There were like in Okami itself, there were fox characters in there. I'm thinking it's been a while since I played it, but again, Ninetales and Foxfire, I think, were the names of the characters in there. But again, it tends to be video games or I guess anime and manga as well, because and that tends to be where it's been most prevalent. I think this is probably the first almost westernized kind of TV series that I think is going to be tackling this. So it's definitely not something that you see outside of, you know, really something that has kind of almost originally come from Japan first. So that's going to be interesting as well, because typically a lot of these figures that have taken on the kitsune kind of mythology originated in Japan and have then been translated and brought to a Western audience. It's going to be interesting seeing the kitsune done from the Western audience being like it westernized straight away. So as in it's being done here first rather than taken from Japan and translated across. I think that's going to be very, very interesting as well.
Yeah, and we know that Jeff is a big fan of this myth, so I think he's going to do it justice. I do have high hopes too, and I think, you know, it's going to be really well done.
Yeah, and I can't blame him for liking it. The kitsune is like such an interesting mythology and such an interesting character, because it's a trickster who likes to go out and mess around with people and have fun and get into trouble. And, you know, one of the things that I read is they said that kitsune would help out poor villagers by making it look like their fields were lying fallow or they wouldn't have any grain whenever the tax people came by, so that they wouldn't have to pay taxes on stuff. So it's got, I think it's got a really rich, fun history that, you know, I think Jeff likes to do that kind of fun, silly stuff every once in a while with his writing, like obviously with Styles and the way that he interacts with everybody and some of the exchanges that Scott has with people where he's trying to be funny and it just falls flat. So I'm really hoping we get to see that kind of playful, childlike nature of the kitsune in this new character.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, even just from a writing standpoint, this could be a catalyst for a lot of what's going to be going on this season if the kitsune is supposed to be a trickster and that sort of thing. So you guys mentioned Inari earlier on. Can you say more about that and the connection between her? She's a deity, right? And the kitsune?
Do you want to take this one a second, Jen?
No, go right ahead, Danya.
I was going to say, the first thing that I want to say is just really, really quickly, the really interesting thing, Inari itself as a deity is typically androgynous. So Inari does not usually, it has a male and a female form, and it's depicted throughout the whole of the mythology and folklore and everything through the Shinto religion as either. So it can be either. It's not exclusively one. So that's a really interesting little bit as well. I believe I remember correctly. Jen will probably correct me if I'm wrong.
I will.
Their sort of branch of things that they kind of cover is it like fertility, rice, tea, sake, agriculture, and industry, wasn't it? I think that's everything.
Yeah, and it depends on which one you look at too.
Yeah.
Generally it's rice. they're considered the rice deity is usually the big one that you see.
Isn't what do they at the shrines? They you leave sometimes little gifts at the shrines.
They'll leave it's called inari sushi. So again, inari and then zushi, sushi. And it's kurage, which is, I think it's kurage. It's a deep fried bean curd. It's almost breaded, kind of, is the way it looks like. But they take a pocket of this stuff. They deep fry it. They cut it into triangles. And then they stuff it with sushi rice. And that's because the kurage, the breaded stuff, is the fox's favorite food. And then they put rice in it because inari is the rice god, I'm assuming. So they leave inari sushi at the temples and stuff. And it's delicious. If you've not had it, it is so good.
Yeah. I was going to say, now I really want sushi.
Yeah, it's like, it's sweet and kind of sticky. And it's amazing. It's so good. I haven't eaten dinner yet. So sounds really amazing right now.
So anything else about this section before we move on to the next one?
The onomatopoeia that foxes use in Japan is kon kon. So if you're in Japan and somebody asks, what does the fox say? You can say kon kon.
Is that something like people normally just come up to you and ask? Like, what does the fox say? Really?
Well, I have a baby, so I get what does a doggy make? What noise does a doggy make? What noise does a kitty make? And because I'm a total dork, I'll be like, what does the fox say?
I will probably just smile at you and laugh.
You know what? Occasionally she barks at you if you bark at her, which is adorable. But yeah, I'm just a dork. I really like that song. I'll admit it.
The video still cracks me up.
It confused me so much the first time I saw it. The first time I watched it, I was like, what is this? What am I looking at? None of this makes sense. And then I watched it like 4 times in a row and I was walking around singing the song at work. I was like, I have a problem. Problem.
I'm not entirely sure I know what you guys are talking about.
What? I don't know how you missed that one. Because it was everywhere for ages. So basically, once we're finished with this, we are going to be introducing Karen to What Does the Fox Say?
Just to give you an idea of how popular this is and how insane it is that you have not seen this, the video on YouTube has 217 million views.
Oh my God.
217 million. And if you don't know what it's just crazy. It's crazy.
We could probably put a link at the end of the show notes when it goes up on Hyperbole as well, if anybody else hasn't seen it, so you guys know what we're talking about.
Karen is so
and you can, and then you can all thank us for introducing you to it. I use the word thank really liberally there, I guess.
Yeah, Karen, we're going to make you listen to this.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's really catchy. It's really catchy. Anyway.
Right. Sounds good. So what's our next section?
Yakuza.
Yay.
Yeah. For those people who've never heard of Yakuza before, or Yakuza, if we're going to go with the westernized pronunciation, they are equivalent to the mafia in Japan. So they're generally it's translated as the Japanese mafia. And I guess, Danya, you're the one who told me about this spoiler that Jeff said he was going to be doing something with Yakuza.
Yeah. Yeah, so there was the spoiler, and for those who don't want any spoilers, spoiler alert, fingers in ears right now. they said that there would be a flashback to Chris Argent when he was around, I think they said that he was around 18, and he would be dealing with the Yakuza at that point. And that's why this is like something that's I guess really, really going to be interesting to cover, because when we were doing a little bit of research for this bit particularly, it was very, very difficult to try and pinpoint exactly which point in time we would be looking at them from, because they change. Obviously, as time moves on, they also change in what they do and what they did. So yeah, I think Jen crunched the hard numbers.
Yeah, so any timeline discussion about Teen Wolf, you obviously have to throw like a huge asterisk up next to everything. So Donnie and I were like, where are we going to start with this? So we figured, okay, Allison is 17. That has been announced. It is canon. We know it. So if Chris has a 17-year-old daughter, it makes sense that he would be in his mid-40s. So we pegged him at like 45, which would mean that when Allison was born, he was 28. And that kind of made sense to us. So if you go back another, 10 years to when he's 18, that's in 1985-ish, I think, if that sounds right. That makes me feel really old now that I'm thinking about it like that. But then because we needed that big asterisk, we were like, okay, we're going to give plus or minus 5 years. So we looked at the Yakuza during the 1980s to the 1990s, which I hadn't previously studied Yakuza in that kind of setting. And in the more modern period, my focus when I was doing my undergrad was in the 1850s to the 1950s. But during the 1980s, there was actually like a really like tumultuous time in the history of the Yakuza. It separated into different clans almost. And there's three really big ones. And the biggest of those is the Yamaguchi clan or the Yamaguchi Gumi. And they're a group that's made up of, at the highest, 523 affiliated gangs that were underneath that umbrella of the Yamaguchi-gumi. So they're huge. They're everywhere. And in 1981, the third boss of the Yamaguchi-gumi, whose name was Kazuo Taoka, he ends up dying. After being like, people tried to kill him like three or four times in the late 70s. Like he got shot in the neck and survived. Like people kept trying to assassinate him, but he dies in 1981. And right around the same time, his second in command gets thrown into jail. So there's like no official leadership for a little while for the Yamaguchis. And his wife actually his widow comes in and takes over control along with eight generals. So you've got his widow and eight other people who are working together for about 2-3 years to keep control over everything. And they finally end up having a vote to determine who's going to be the successor. And it comes down to two guys, Masahisa Takenaka and Hiroshi Yamamoto. And Takenaka ends up winning. And he's like a really violent guy. He's got like a rap sheet 5 miles long kind of thing. And Yamamoto is a little bit more intellectual. So Yamamoto eventually comes out and says, I'm not following this dude. And he takes basically half of the Yamaguchi like soldiers, peons, gangs and stuff and makes his own gang family, which is the Ichimokai. So you then have for a couple of years, the Ichimokai and the Yamaguchi-gumi kind of like butting heads in like a really kind of Cold War-esque kind of situation where people keep leaving the Ichimokai, going back to the Yamaguchi-gumi, and then eventually they just like the Ichimokai just end up going in and killing Takenaka and a bunch of his men. They just kind of walk into where he is, that he's in an elevator with a bunch of his dudes, and they just mow him down, just shoot him all, which obviously it throws the Yamaguchis into kind of this turmoil where they try to find a new guy to lead them, but it also starts this ridiculously violent gang war. And then for the rest of the decade up until 1989, there's like constant open in the street fighting between the Ichimokai and the Yamaguchi-gumi, where people are literally in the middle of the day, in the middle of the street, coming out and beating up each other. And it ended up being one of the longest gang wars that Japan's ever seen, which compared to what we see in the US is really short because it's only like a 2-year period. But in Japan, it was like really big deal. So if Chris Argent was born in 1967 and was 18 in 1985, this will be really exciting. But if we're completely wrong about the timeline, you can just ignore everything I just said.
I'm really hoping that we're right about this.
I do too.
Really, really hoping that we got the numbers right on this and that with the timeline we've been given and the best estimated like kind of guess that we could make. If Chris Argent goes to Japan at 18 and is involved with the Yakuza in some way, this would be so interesting for him to be in the middle of.
Yeah,
this
it would be really
so good.
It would be really high stakes, like really high stakes, because if he's like affiliated with either one of these groups, he's going to have to be looking over his shoulder the whole time. So yeah, it'd be really cool. It'd
yeah.
be really cool.
Yeah.
Can it be January already?
This is this is kind of our sort of semi prediction for what I guess Chris Argent may be up to in Japan with the Yakuza, is this little bit of history right here would be such an interesting thing to touch on, because gang wars just in general on TV are like, they're really interesting and really engaging. And I guess seeing that in a Teen Wolf setting, especially with a younger Chris Argent, I think that would be really cool.
I'll be honest, I'm just looking forward to the eye candy on that one.
Oh, I can't wait to find out who they've cast as young Chris.
Yes.
I can all drool over him.
This makes me kind of sad, though, because I really wanted... I mean, this makes no sense. I'm just obsessed with Kill Bill. And and Oren Ishii, who was a leader of the Yakuza, she was born in 75, so, like, the dates wouldn't quite match up. But it would have been really cool to get, like, some weird sort of crossover between the two, but that's not going to happen.
Well, as much as I love Kill Bill and as much as I love Oren, because I think she is amazing, it was really, really uncommon for, at least during that time period, for there to be female Oyabun, the leaders of the groups. And if they were there, they kind of worked in kind of a more like shadow puppet kind of idea, where they would have other people go out, you know, men go out and pretend to be the leader. And that's just, it's a reflection of the way that feminism has worked in Japan and the cultural aspects of women's roles in that country, especially in terms of leadership. So as much as I would love, love, love to see Chris Argent running around in a female-led gang where people are getting stitched up all the time and crazy cool fight scenes with lots of slow-mo, I don't know if it'll happen.
That makes me think, because we're supposed to be getting a group of female hunters, right? This, like, towards the end of this season, wasn't it? Who are coming in?
Oh,
right.
Happy.
What if, because we don't know who they are. They haven't been cast yet, have they? Or we haven't had a casting announcement for that.
No, although I believe we're supposed to think that they're South American.
Ah.
Okay. Are they chasing after Korra? Is that the idea? Because she was running around South America?
See, there's got to be some sort of connection there. And it wasn't anything that was stated flat out. But when I was at New York Comic Con, there was sort of like one thing was said and another thing was said in relation to that. And it was like he was avoiding answering directly, but you kind of knew by like how he answered that was sort of like that they were supposed to be South American and that sort of thing, because it segued between the two questions. So I mean, that's really all we have to go off of right now.
It would have been so interesting if they'd been Japanese and
interestingly enough, Danya, there's actually a very large Japanese population in Brazil. There's a lot of Japanese people who live in Brazil, and I'd have to look it up again, but a large group of Japanese people emigrated to Brazil, and I'm trying to remember when it happened, and I'm failing miserably, but she ended up having a lot of people who speak Portuguese natively and have lived in Brazil their whole life, but they're ethnically Japanese.
Interesting.
That is very interesting, because it could be then that if they did emigrate at some point, they could have been women that Chris Argent had met during his time in Japan.
That'd be so cool.
Oh.
That would be so cool.
And they could be, because we had that hint that there would potentially be an ex-Yakuza member that they will be going to for help.
What if it's a love interest? What if we have a love interest for Papa Argent, who is a Japanese Brazilian woman who's also a hunter?
Hunter after becoming ex-Yakuza.
That would be so awesome.
She has a very complicated past.
Yeah, for real. I'll be honest, I would love that character to death. She could end up stabbing everybody, but I'd still be like, you're the coolest.
Yeah, that could be really interesting.
That'd be so cool.
Obviously, pure speculation here, guys. We
But if we wish hard enough, maybe it'll come true.
You know what? Christmas is coming.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to go sit on a mall Santa's lap and ask for it.
So I have, this is sort of just another kind of weird thing, but because Kill Bill is really like the only sort of reference I have for the Yakuza and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a fairly popular movie. I was talking about it on Twitter a while ago, and some people had seen it, some people hadn't. But for those that have, is there representation? I mean, obviously you talked about Oren Ishii, like that wouldn't really happen. But, you know, other than that, the sort of structure that we see and the things that we saw in the movie, is that fairly accurate to what it was like in real life?
It's very hierarchical, the way that it works. You have the Oyabun and then you have the Kobun. And that literally translates to like the parent person and the child person. So when you look at the overall structure, it's very much top to bottom. So, you know, if your boss tells you to do something, you do it. And if you tell your peons to do something, they do it. So that aspect of it is very true. The violence, it's a Quentin Tarantino movie. It's highly exaggerated to begin with, but I can't remember if they showed this or not, but like there's a tradition in the Yakuza where if you break a promise, you get your finger cut off. And that happens. It's not uncommon. So it is very violent. And I was actually telling Danya this, when I lived in Japan for a little while, I actually went out and drank with some Yakuza without really knowing it.
That sounds like an excellent story.
Yeah, so I was on a study abroad program in Morioka, which is the prefectural capital of Iwate Prefecture, which is a kind of rural, industrial, agrarian area. It's the largest prefecture in Japan, but it's also the poorest. And so because the program has been going on for like 20, 30 years now, we've got really tight community ties with Morioka. So one of the things we get to do is we get to carry a shrine through the streets during a fall festival. And some of the people that we were carrying the shrine with were Yakuza, which I didn't learn about until much later. And we went to an after party when we were done carrying the shrine, and we were drinking with them. And these guys invited us to go out afterwards, after the after party, to go keep drinking with them. And the program director, the Japanese coordinator of it, came up and was like, you can't do that. You can't go drinking with them because they're Yakuza. No, don't do it. I don't remember any of their names except for one of them. He was like kind of a bigger guy and he had like a fake pompadour, like 1950s overly gelled hairstyle. And he called himself Mr. Lemon. And I know that's not his real name, but that's what he called himself the whole time. And it
Mr.
wasn't even
Lemon?
Like, I'm not even like, yeah, not even kidding. And it wasn't like he was going, yeah, I'm Lemon-san. No, he was calling himself in like a real thick Japanese accent, Mr. Demon. like, it was weird. I mean, they were nice enough guys. I didn't have any problems with them. They didn't like threaten bodily harm at all. But yeah, they were Yakuza. It was fun.
I'm still not over Mr. Lemon.
Mr. Lemon, yeah, it's the only one I remember. One of them was really cute. I remember that too. There are a lot of cute guys in Japan. I'll just put that out there.
All right. Did we All have right. anything else about the Yakuza?
I would love to talk about how they developed, because it's also really interesting in how the society of Japan changed as it got into the modern period. But then we're talking about like early Edo period, which is like 100 AD or 1000 AD. Like, a really long time ago. There's yeah. no way Chris Argent was running around with those guys.
But it's really cool. I would recommend to any of our listeners, if you haven't read about Japanese history before, or if you haven't looked into the Yakuza specifically, the history of Japan and the myths and the legends that are there are just absolutely fascinating, because it's so vastly different than what you see in the Western world. And it's so vastly different from what you're ever going to be reading about in like your standard history courses, world history courses, survey history courses, whether you're in the high school level or if you're in college level. You know, there's a lot of stuff that you miss that is just amazeballs, and I love it. And you should all read about Japanese history because it's the best.
And you should go watch Kill Bill, because I'm you obsessed should. With that movie, and it's awesome. Unless you're squeamish, and then maybe then you'll you want should. To.
Yeah, give it a pass if you're squeamish.
Yeah, watch it on TBS when it's been highly censored.
So I've never seen it on TV.
They show it on TBS every once in a while. But they, you know, it's, I think it's almost always Kill Bill 2 and not the first one. And if you haven't seen the first one, you need to watch the first one just for the anime scene in it, because it's amazing.
Yes.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I totally know what I'm going to be watching after we get done with this.
I know. I was like, oh, I have too much work to do, but I really want to watch Kill Bill now.
So I'm really, really in the mood to watch it now as well, except it's super late for me and I am in work tomorrow. So
you
I'm
do
just
need
like,
to go to it's midnight for you right now, if I'm doing math right.
Yeah. It's yeah. after midnight. But it's kind of like, no, Danya, after you're done recording this, you cannot go watch Kill Bill Volume 1. Swiftly followed by Kill Bill Volume 2.
Volume 2.
Yeah, you can't just watch one of them. You have to watch both.
Yeah.
I'm going to get groggy texts from you tomorrow, like, Jen, I did it. I shouldn't have. Oh, God.
Or we could just have a live viewing party.
That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
That would be so fun.
Okay, so since it is late for Danya, couple of things left. So we did talk quite a bit about, you know, what we think is going on with Kira and possibly what role the Yakuza could have in the relationship with Chris and that sort of thing. But is there anything else from, you know, this mythology and these stories and the history that you could see affecting our werewolves and you think might end up in Teen Wolf?
The other thing that obviously went out fairly recently, and a lot of people may have seen this around Tumblr, there was a casting call on the 4th of November for anyone, union or non-union, who was of Japanese descent or look Japanese or had Japanese heritage, to go and film on the 7th and 8th of November, so not that long ago. This is very, very recently. And you also may have seen, if you follow the Teen Wolf Tumblr, the picture of that, if you were scrolling pretty quickly down your dash, like I was, you may have automatically assumed it was something from Captain America. I did. I was scrolling really quickly that
is
day.
Is this the, like, the World War II?
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's the World War II little picture with, it looked like something out of Captain America.
This really has me interested. Like,
yeah. But the casting call specifically mentioned internment camps in the U.S. during the 1940s.
Oh, God.
Which I'm really interested to know why the 1940s, why we're going back that far, and what that's, how that's going to play into everything.
If Jeff is making use of the Kitsune myth in the sense that they're extremely old, it could be that Kira is, in a sense, ageless or doesn't age visibly and was in the concentration camp.
That could be really cool.
I'm honestly, I'm more nervous about the fact that we're going to be addressing concentration camps in the show, because it's such a sensitive topic. And when I was in middle school, my mom was a minister for a Japanese American church, and we knew people there who had been in the internment camps. So for me, it's like an intensely personal and like kind of uncomfortable topic. And I'm just, I'm really hoping that they handle it with the respect and the care that needs to be done with that. It's just, I mean, I know I'm not the only person. I've seen a couple of people on my dash being like, what are you thinking? So I'm hoping it's really, really important to the plot and not just thrown in there for color commentary.
I mean, if they're going to be doing this, if they're going this far back, there has to be a reason for it. I mean, there's got to be a specific reason why this is being involved. It's not going to have just been thrown in there for like no reason at all, because with this, it is such a sensitive subject that I can't imagine that it would have just been put in here just because they just want to. I mean, it does require a great deal of respect to be able to show that. And I really, it's really interesting actually, then going back to thinking about the kitsune as ageless and their power and everything with them and how wise they are, like pertaining to how old they get. And if Kira was in one of the camps, that I think that would actually be really interesting.
And then we also don't know how werewolves age. You know, because it was kind of hinted that they age differently than a human would. It'd be really interesting if someone from the Hail Pack was in the camps or was related to the camps, because non-Japanese people would work at the camps either as guards or as like staff in the camps. So that could be, that could be interesting if like Kira's in the camp and starts interacting with people from the Hail Pack. And that's what eventually brings her to Beacon Hills, is because of that.
Obviously, again, pure speculation.
Yeah, pure speculation.
I think when you have a topic like this, it would really surprise me if they weren't respectful about it. Because, I mean, this is such a huge deal in not only like American history, but Japanese history, world history. I mean, it has such a large impact, and it was such a big thing. And I would, I would be really surprised if they didn't handle it with the care that it deserves. So I'm not too worried about it. I think if Jeff is as into the kitsune myth as he says he was, he probably knows quite a bit about, you know, all of this stuff, and I think he's going to be as close to it as a lot of other people are.
And there's a lot of literature about it out there and a lot of firsthand stories. So researching it in like a historical sense, doing like primary document kind of investigations, is very, you know, you can do it. And there's still, you know, obviously we still have pictures, there's video of these things that you can go out and look at. So I think it's easier to be true to the experience than it would be to not be. I'm interested to see how it's going to play into the plot line.
So we want to give just like a really quick, just like a very, very quick rundown of what they are for anyone who may not be aware of what an internment camp is, because I know we have youngsters out there. Yeah, we do. I know that, like, I met at Wolf Spain a couple of people who were under 16 who have listened to the podcast, and they may not have at this point covered this, maybe in classes or in their own reading. So it may be.
Yeah. And I don't know what kind of education outside of the States you get on it. And I don't know, Karen, what your experience with that kind of stuff was when you were getting going through high school and things. I know we didn't really touch on it very much when I was in school. But yeah, so December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor is attacked by the Japanese, and kind of in a backlash to this, and it was kind of building up for a while in terms of racial tensions on the West Coast. There was a very large first and second generation Japanese population that lived out there.
And so after Pearl Harbor happened, people freaked out. And so eventually there's a government order that's signed where all first and second generation, I think, Japanese Americans are taken and sent to these camps, the biggest of which was Manzanar. And they, like, people lost their property, they lost their homes, they lost their jobs. And when the war ended and they were taken out of the camps and said, okay, you're free to go now, they basically had nothing. And, like, some of the people, some of the, like, fighting aged men who went into these camps were given the option to leave them if they were to go to the war front. Do you end up having these Japanese American units who are seeing some of the heaviest fighting of World War II and having some of the highest casualty rates? And it, eventually reparations were made, but it, like, barely covered hardly anything that was effectively lost. And it's, yeah, if you want to read a fiction account of this kind of time period and the way that the racial tensions work, I highly recommend Snow Falling on Cedars because it addresses some of these same issues. Only it's in a northern, I think it's in Oregon or Washington town where there's, it's really good. I won't go into a summary of the book. It's a good book. It talks about these tensions. But yeah, internment camps. Not good. Bad times.
Yeah.
Tar paper houses. Not enough warm clothes. Like, racial prejudice makes me sad.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good to, I think it's good to have to know
Yeah.
about it. Like knowing this stuff about your own history and knowing about this of like other countries' history and everything means that, you know, as long as you don't shy away from it and you don't try to almost sugarcoat it and hide it away, you know, this is the stuff that you learn from and you better yourself from and not hiding it away. I mean, this is dealt with in the way that I'm hoping it is. I will have a lot of respect for them actually tackling this because
Yes.
it is a really difficult subject to tackle and still be very sensitive and respectful about it. I do still have very, very high hopes for it.
Yeah,
And
I was.
I will have a lot of respect if this is done extremely well.
100% agree. 100%.
And hopefully we'll sort of be seeing kind of a positive outcome of this because this second half of the season is going to be a lot about, you know, females. We're going to get a whole female group of hunters and it's going to be about female strength. And if Kira is somehow connected to the internment camps, hopefully, you know, she came out of them stronger and better and wiser, and it will, you know, kind of pay homage to that. So even though it is a dark time, like you said, if it can be do really well, there's going to be a lot of respect there for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm ready for it. I'm ready
Yeah,
for it. I can't keep waiting. I'm
I
like, I'm gonna lose my mind. But there is only so much fan fiction that I can read to tide me over.
This is true. Well, that about wraps it up for the main part of the episode. But of course, we have our new non sequitur section where we basically just ask each other random questions so you can get to know us a little bit better. Does anyone have one to start off with?
I should have been thinking about this probably longer than 30 seconds ago.
Yeah, me too.
It's been sitting in our notes the whole time, and I'm like, what is, all right. Let's go back to Pokemon. Original, Red and Blue. Who was your starter?
Charmander.
God, I.
Easy. Every single time I pick Charmander without question. 'Cause I really love Charizard, okay? So I would just like go straight through and I would yeah, evolve it straight up. Actually, almost exclusively I will pick the fire starter. Yeah, fire starter.
I don't even know what that means. Like, I watched the TV show and I collected the cards because they were cool looking, and that's
What?
about
You didn't
it.
play the game?
No, I had no idea how to play the
Oh
game.
no.
Yeah, I always started with Squirtle because I'm crazy. Apparently, the water Pokemon are not popular at all, but I always played Squirtle mainly because I love turtles. I love them.
Is it lame if I said I really liked Pikachu? Because, like, I'm supposed to really like him.
No, they even came out with a specific version where you got Pikachu as your starter Pokemon, and it was basically a port of Red and Blue, only you got Pikachu.
Okay, then yeah. I choose that one.
Yeah, Karen is super special. She chose Pokemon Yellow. So
yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be a little shame from that. I'm just going to warn you.
Okay. Oh, I don't know. I kind of like Pikachu.
I played Yellow. I liked it.
Yeah, I know, like, there tends to be a very, very sort of split kind of, mm-hmm. You either love Pikachu or you hate Pikachu.
How can because you hate Pikachu?
Well, because Pikachu became, like, really overexposed because mm-hmm. of the anime series, the cartoon series.
Yeah.
So because he/she became a mascot almost of Pokemon. Like, it mm-hmm. was the Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
The Pokemon. The overexposure tended to get to people, and that I've seen a lot of kind of it's kind of to and fro. So I know at one point I got to a point where I was like, there was just so much, like mm-hmm. so much like Pikachu merchandise, Pikachu coverage, adverts, everything that I got
had
to
a
point
Pikachu
where I was
Tamagotchi.
Like, yeah, I had a Pikachu Tamagotchi.
I had a couple of Pikachu, like, plushies.
Yeah. And so, it got to a point where it was like, it's too much. And I went through a period where I was like, no, I can't take any more Pikachu. Take Pikachu away. I can't deal with this much. I really can't. And I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, actually, no, I kind of like Pikachu again.
Yeah.
I've hit that. I've gotten over that. That hill, and I've come back around, and I've gone, no, Pikachu's cool, okay? I like Pikachu.
Here's the shameless plug. We actually have a Pokemon podcast on Hypeable, so if you guys are interested in that, go check it out. Mitch is in charge of it. He's been on the show before. He's really into it, and he'll probably talk about it all day long with you guys if you want to, so that's cool. Okay, so this is a kind of a good segue into my question, I guess, which is really, I mean, it's supposed to be a random question, but I feel like this is really random. What is your favorite color, and when did you realize it was your favorite color, / why? There's a very specific reason why I'm asking this, because my story's kind of weird.
Okay. I went through I go through a lot of phases of, like, liking colors. I went through, like, a really, really long phase where I really liked red. And then I did, like, I did everything. Like, my room, I kind of, like, got a red bedspread, red lamp. I color-coordinated everything. Bearing in mind, when I then decide that I actually prefer a different color, I will literally change my whole room on the whim just because I kind of like this color. So now I need a new lamp, and I need a new shade for my light, and I need new matching accessories, which include like candles and like little ornaments and stuff. At the moment, it's yellow.
Yellow.
I really like the color yellow at the moment. I don't know why. I kind of match colors to moods. So mm-hmm. when I'm in a particular sense of self, I will like a particular color. The moment it's yellow, because I guess at the moment I'm feeling pretty good. My disposition tends to be quite sunny at the moment. So as long as that keeps continuing, I'm hoping I'll still like yellow. So yeah.
So if we see you like all dressed in black, we know that you're in a bad mood, right?
Oh god. Oh man, I don't think I could ever dress in just all black. I'm pretty sure only Derek Hale could pull that off. You know, and I'm not that pretty, guys. I cannot pull that off. So I'm very much a colors person, so my wardrobe tends to like be very colorful. I doubt you would ever see me in all black.
That's good to know.
My favorite color is probably like the green you see on trees, like 3 weeks into spring, where it's like that super bright, super fresh, super new, like HD quality green, where like it's so green and like it just burns your eyes out almost. And I don't know, I've always just really loved that color. Green's always been my favorite, but specifically like trees in the spring when it's brand new, just favorite color ever. Super pretty.
My favorite color is green too, but mine is neon green, like
Oh,
the
yeah.
brightest color green that like literally burns your eyeballs looking at it. That's my favorite color. And I remember the exact moment I decided this was my favorite color because I was at my uncle's house in New Jersey and he had a bottle of dish soap on the counter. And it was bright green, and I was just in awe of this color. And I was like, wow, it's so pretty. And like, I mean, that was a long time ago. This has been my favorite color since like middle school, and it still is. And I can't explain it. I just really love neon green.
Oh my goodness.
But that's still pretty. Yeah, neon green.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, Ro. I don't think I know anyone who likes like neon colors, like a
I
lot.
really like certain shades of neon, like red and pink. Like I've got a running, like long sleeve running jacket thing for when I go run in the winter, and
Yeah.
it's like it's bright pink, and I have matching shoes that are bright pink, and there's something about just how absolutely insanely vibrant it is that I
Yeah.
really enjoy. Like I
Funny,
get you.
funny you say that. My running shoes, they're light gray on the top, but the edges, soles, and the laces are neon pink. Like they are bright pink, and the same with my running top. It is,
Pink.
it's black in sections, but it has like large cutout sections that are neon pink as
You and
well.
I need to go running together next time you're in the States.
Oh yeah, let's totally do that. We need
You'll
to
kick
do
my
that.
butt. I'm in terrible shape, but
I
we need to.
love running.
I know you do.
I adore running
You're
so
sick in
much.
the
Like, where I live in Cardiff has some of the nicest parks to run around. One of the parks literally loops around a castle. So, I have like the nicest places to run at the moment. It's getting really cold though. Really cold and also really slippery because all of the leaves have started falling off the trees, but they haven't been brushing the paths off. And then it's been raining on top of the leaves.
Okay.
So, every time I've been trying to run recently, I've been slipping all over the place and I'm worried at some point I'm probably going to fall and hurt myself. I really don't want to do that.
I took
So,
a yeah, I took running right after I went back to work after my maternity leave. So that was like December and January. And so I was going out when it was like it'd be like 5 or 6 degrees and windy, and there'd be snow and ice on the ground, and I'd like get myself bundled up and then I'd go run 2 miles, and I would come home and be like on fire in the heat, just like immediately stripping everything off in the middle of my kitchen because I was boiling. Yeah.
yeah.
I still prefer that to running in the summer.
I like running in like either just really, really early autumn or spring. I really like running in spring. But I run pretty much all year round. But those are like the two times where I prefer it because it's not too hot, not too cold. It's really, really comfortable weather to run in. And I'm now going off on a tangent. We're going off on a tangent about running. This happens so often. This happened like when we do these questions at the end, whenever I'm on, we tend to go off on a tangent because last week, if you listen, was it last week or the week before? It was the week
Last week,
before.
I think.
I don't know. When the last episode came out, and Natalie made the mistake of asking me about Downton Abbey, then I made the mistake of
Oh
asking her
no.
about One Direction. Just like that, going, I
need to watch Downton Abbey because
Yes, you do.
I've not watched it yet.
Yes, you do.
Me
That's
neither.
it. That's all on both of you need to forget Kill Bill tonight. That's your thing. You need to go and watch Downton Abbey. Go and do that so I can talk to you guys about it, and then I won't have to drag people on the podcast to talk about it with me. Right, I guess I've got to ask a question now as well, haven't I? Right, okay. What's your favorite accent?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. Oh no, Donna. Donna, why would you ask such an awesome
This is a
question?
very serious question. I don't know if I'm
I
prepared to answer this.
need to do research. I really like Tom Hiddleston's accent because it's just the right amount of posh British to make me really happy.
It's kind of very, very Queen's English.
Oh, and it's so.
It's,
And
yeah.
he could read poetry to me all day. He could talk to me about why grass grows, but I'd be okay with it.
I mean, if it's Tom Hiddleston, yeah. I mean,
just whatever you want to say, sir, just go.
are we
But I.
classing Tom Hiddleston as just an accent now?
Yeah. I'll be honest, if I was walking down the street and stopped to buy something and a guy had an accent that sounded exactly like Tom Hiddleston, I'd be like, I'll leave my husband. Just talk to me. I'm
You're so
kidding.
lucky Sean doesn't listen to this.
Oh God, there's no way he would listen to this ever. I get enough side eye when I'm watching the show or working on fanfic. He won't listen to a Teen Wolf podcast. I'll stick with Tom Hiddleston. I'll probably think of like eight more accents that I really love, but yeah, the Tom Hiddleston accent I think might be my favorite right now.
See, I like a bit more like a rougher kind of accent with like I really like Fitz's accent, Scottish from Agents of Shield. I like that a lot. And also, oh, I'm not gonna be able to remember his name. He's really popular, but the guy who plays the knave on Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Oh, I haven't been
Shoot.
watching Wonderland.
Is it Michael?
I've seen them on my dash.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, 'cause he has like a Northern English accent, I think. And it's just I just really like it.
Well, and then of course, Donya's accent is amazing.
Oh no, don't you start.
Yes.
No,
Yes. Yes.
no.
And
I love her
Natalie's.
accent.
Anything
And
but
Natalie's,
American
yeah.
accent.
Do you like an American accent?
Huh?
What accent do you like, Tanya?
Me, Scottish. I
Scottish.
really love the Scottish accent.
Well, Tom Hiddleston is actually Scottish, at least
Are
partially.
you really?
He is. I was listening to him on the Nerdist podcast, not meaning to pimp another podcast, but Tom Hiddleston's on it, and he starts impersonating his dad, who's Scottish, and he's speaking in a Scottish accent, and it's brilliant. So you both should listen to that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's other people as well who are like surprisingly Scottish. There should now be a section. A new section. Surprisingly Scottish. So you've got David Tennant and John Barrowman, who
Yes.
are both surprisingly Scottish.
By the way, the knave, he's played by Michael Soka. Socha? I don't know how to say his last name. He was on Being Human.
Oh, hold on. I'm Tedda Googles.
He is the reason why I watch Once Upon a Time in
Oh,
Wonderland.
that guy.
he's very attractive.
Yes, he is. And
Oh.
now this really is a tangent. We should probably cut this off before it gets any worse.
I'm older than him. I'm starting to feel so old when it comes to that stuff where I see an actor and I'm like, oh, he's so attractive. And they go look him up on IMDb and I'm like, I was in sixth grade when you were born. Oh God.
He's a year older than me, so yes.
Yeah, he is 5 months younger than I am. So it's not awful. But like my super awful, horrible, no good crush on Dylan O'Brien. I'm like, I'm so much older than you. It's okay.
let's bring this back. So the guy who plays that actor, mm-hmm. in Being Human, he plays a werewolf.
Yes.
Back on topic.
Yeah, full circle.
Full circle. There we go. Yes, he plays on Being Human the character called Thomas McNair, I guess. Who is was
another show I need to watch.
Hey, werewolf. Yay.
I haven't gotten to his part yet. I just randomly know that he's on that show. I've only watched the first series.
Yeah.
So gotta get to that. But anyway, yes, we're back on topic of werewolves now. We should probably get going before this section is longer than our main section. And so, yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed everything that we talked about. If you have any questions, let us know. Like I said before, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at NATWpodcast. Email address is natwpodcast@gmail.com, and our Tumblr is notanotherteenwolfpodcast@tumblr.com. And then Jen is P1013 on both Twitter and Tumblr. I'm sure she would love to talk about all this Japanese stuff because she is an expert. She has a degree in everything. And I definitely learned a lot. So thank you so much for coming
thank
on.
Thank you for having me. I love
You're
podcasts.
Welcome.
I've been listening to you guys basically since you started, so
that's amazing.
That's phenomenal for me. Like, I've been looking forward to this all week. Like I've been texting Nadia just being like, is it Thursday yet? I want it to be Thursday. I'm so excited. I have to do all this research. This is amazing.
That's so awesome. And we'll definitely have to have you on again, especially especially as we get into the season and we get more of the mythology and stuff. I would love to hear your take on it. So
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. And Danya, of course, thank you for coming on.
Mm-hmm. Always.
And then Danya, go ahead.
That's fine. I'm just saying, yeah, I always love being on here. If you haven't guessed yet, I do love talking to people a lot. I love this thing. It's great. So
yeah. And then, obviously, I'll be seeing you guys at Indie PopCon when you come out for that.
Yes.
So we can do a live and in-person meet and greet kind of thing.
That would be amazing.
I would really enjoy it.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm so happy.
So much exciting stuff, guys.
Yes.
So much.
We have a lot coming up. I mean, we can't really talk about any of it yet. But there are some really, really awesome things that are in store. So spread the word. Stay in touch, you know, stay around because we've got some really cool things that I think all of our listeners are going to like.
And we can leave it there and say goodbye because that's nice. That's a nice place to leave it.
That's
a good tease.
There's a little bit of teasing and a nice little bit of mystery there for you guys. We're totally mysterious and cool.
Well, I'm intrigued. I want to know more.
All right. Well, in that case, we will see you guys later. Bye.
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 Your fur is red, so beautiful, like an angel in disguise. But if you meet a friendly horse, will you communicate by Morse? Morse, Morse. How will you speak to that horse? What does the fox say?
Thank you.